As conscientious safe pilots, we do the best pre-flight checks that we can to mitigate risks and help assure a safe flight. We check control surfaces, static ports, and look for telltale drips of oil on the ramp or hangar floor. We use flashlights to peek inside the cowling to see if something isn't in order. But how much can we really see in a crowded engine compartment? It was something unseen that turned into a potentially deadly situation. The story is coming up on this episode of I Laughed. I learned about flying from that. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 68 of Flying Magazine's I Learned About Flying From That podcast, brought to you by Avemco Aviation Insurance. I'm Rob Ryder, and my guest on this episode is Tim Schaefer, who, after taking off in his Bonanza one day, noticed some RPM changes that weren't normal. But eventually, things seemed to settle down. Still, he wasn't comfortable. Should he continue the flight or return to the airport? We'll hear what his decision was, why he made it, and what he learned. It was an unseen problem that could have killed him. Tim will tell us about it right after this message from Avemco. Avemco insured their first plane in 1961. Ironically, that same 172 became Avemco's first claim. That's what started them on a mission to improve pilot safety. They even reward safe pilots with reduced premiums. You'll save 5% for caring enough about safety to be an I Laughed listener. Visit avemco.com/flying or call 800-338-8705 and ask an Avemco Aviation Insurance specialist how you can save with the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Now, I learned about flying from that. The stories we tell here on I Learned About Flying From That are about pilots who get into dicey situations and live to tell about it. But my guest today is a guy who didn't even realize he was in a dicey situation until after he landed, and it was intuition that played a significant role in his decision-making. Tim Schaefer, welcome to I Laughed.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Your story involves something that you could not have found until it actually occurred. And we will get to that shortly. But I'd like to find out, Tim, from you, how you use your airplane for business, where it started. Were you a kid like so many of the other guests and other pilots around here? Whenever a plane would fly, you'd look up. Were you that kid?
I was that kid. And my first memories of flight were, of course, looking up and seeing the airplanes go overhead. And I live in rural Minnesota, so all the airplanes that went over at any altitude were all small planes. And then my father, who was a farmer, would go up every year and look at the crops and fly in a Cessna 172 that was hot and it was bumpy. But I loved every minute of it. And just going in circles, checking out the field. So that's the first airplane I rode in.
And he was a pilot, or did you hire a pilot to do that?
No, we hired pilots and family friends and such to fly us. And there were a number of them over the years. So,
did your dad have a lot of acreage in the farm that you had to keep an eye on? And did you run racetrack patterns back and forth, or just kind of fly around in circles till something didn't look right?
Well, it was a decent sized farm, and then we also had to jump over into South Dakota for a few acres there. We just kind of went wherever Dad said to go, right? He'd say, "Hey, make another pass over here, make a turn over there," and so we would just wherever he kind of thought that he wanted to look at, that's where we went. Lots of banking, so.
I bet. Did you then start flying when did you start taking your instruction?
I didn't start flying until, about 49, so I didn't start flying until 2011, so later in life.
You set it aside for what reason?
Money and kids, and really didn't have a you know, I had a hobby interest, but I really didn't have a business interest, something that I could use it for my work. And so I don't know, it's just the conservative nature, I guess, that I didn't want to just spend money to just for a hobby at this level. So I never did it.
At what point did your business become important enough that you needed to learn to fly and have an airplane?
About 2011. So
how long did it take you to get your private ticket? Did you really just totally apply yourself and focus on it with nothing else and get it in a short period of time?
Yeah. In the winter, I went through, before I took any instruction in the airplane at all, I just sat down and went through all the, got all the written out of the way before I even set foot in the airplane. I got that done. And then I think I passed, is it 40 hours?
40 hours minimum, yeah.
40 minimum. I think I passed my 40th hour on the way down for the check ride.
Wow. So. That's impressive. That's very impressive because the national average is way beyond that. So you really did apply yourself. Tell me about your primary instructor who got you to the point where you were flying that well. Tell me about the technique that your instructor or instructors used to help you to learn to fly.
Well, my instructor and friend, his name is Jim Moore, and he flies for NetJets, and he's very senior at this point. And I still hear his voice in my head. And for whatever reason, we just really clicked. He let me make mistakes, but not kill him, of course. And I made mistakes, but he just had, you know, and he let me make mistakes, but at a certain point, then he would raise the bar, and then he would raise it again, and then he would raise it again until he felt like I was ready. So
after you got your private, did you go out and get an airplane right away?
Did not purchase any airplane initially. We have a club, so I was flying the club plane, which is a Cessna 172.
How was it equipped? Steam gauges?
Yeah, steam gauges. Nothing fancy at all. You know, pretty much the basic package at that point. Now we've since upgraded it. But yeah, it was pretty basic, and that's what I started flying. And then I can't even tell you what year. Another friend of mine who's a Bonanza guy, and he said, "Hey, come and fly this 33." So I did that. Loved it. And he had a 300 horse engine in a Bonanza 33. So that thing just screamed.
I bet.
Did that. And then the club also bought a Mooney G model. And that's the one that I really started flying for work. And we got that equipped with a nice Garmin GPS. And so at that point, then I started working on my instrument ticket.
You earned that rating, and then came the Bonanza.
Yeah, so this friend that introduced me to the Bonanza, and another one. So there's three of us, and there's three airplanes in the stable at this point. So,
what did you put in your Bonanza? Did you add anything to the panel to upgrade it when you bought it, or was it already equipped? And is it glass? Do you have a lot of glass?
Yeah, it's a beautiful plane. So it's got the Garmin. All Garmin glass in it, except the GPS is an Avidyne, but it's all very seamless, works really well together. So it's a very capable plane. And then we have the and I think it's a key part of the story, is that JPI engine analyzer as well, that shows every cylinder, lots of data on there. So
all right, so you got the airplane, it's all fixed up, it's really cool. And tell me about what your pre-flight is like for your airplane. Are you pretty meticulous every time you get into the, before you get into the airplane to take off?
Yes, but we're also fairly meticulous when we put it away. And so there's three of us that fly the airplane, and we really strive to leave every switch in exactly the right spot. You know, the fuel selector on the left tank. I mean, we just have everything the same, so that we're not, whoever hops in the airplane has the exact same experience every single time.
I have an instructor who has said to me the post-flight inspection may be more important than the pre-flight.
Yeah.
That's when I'm wiping the bugs off the airplane and I'm looking at every part of the plane. Tim, let's move ahead to your I laughed moment. When did it take place? What was your mission? Tell us the story.
It was about a year ago, and I'm in Western Minnesota, and I needed to get to Green Bay for some, it was some middle management coaching that I was going to do over a period of 2 days. And I scheduled these out, like 6 months in advance. And there, I think there was something like 60 or 70 people there. And so it was one of those trips that I had to be there, right? It wasn't really an option not to be there. But it was the summer, the weather's good, it was hot. And I picked up my employee right over the border in Wisconsin, and then we were going to go on to Green Bay. So that was really the mission, be out there for a couple of days and then fly back, do everything in reverse.
It would have been a number of hours for the drive, but just a couple-hour jaunt in the Bonanza.
Yeah, it was like a two-hour flight in the Bonanza versus about an eight-hour drive. So,
having the airplane is one of the joys and benefits of general aviation.
Yeah.
Tell us about how the startup went, and then just fill us in blow by blow by blow to what led to your I laughed experience.
The pre-flight, everything was 100% normal. We always open up the cowling, check the oil. And I always glance in there and look, you know, is there anything dripping, right? We keep our engine compartments, you know, real clean so that we can see things, you know, that don't, you know, if there's something leaking. And that all's normal. Pre-flight was 100% normal. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It was the same pre-flight that I've done. I wasn't interrupted partway through. It was, I had plenty of time and I took it. And so, yeah, everything was going smooth.
No rush, no hustle.
Nope.
And are you going to fly VFR or are you going to fly IFR on this?
I always file IFR on anything cross country. Pretty much whenever I fly the Bonanzas, it's a cross country flight, and I always file. I always figure they have my back. They know where I'm at. They know where I'm going. There's always somebody to talk to. They keep other airplanes out of my space. So why not? So that's I always file.
You take off. Everything's going fine. And then what happened?
So I take off from Morse, where I live, and we climb out. We go, you know, about an, I don't know, 40 minutes or so, and drop down into Wisconsin and pick up the employee. And she's not an aviation buff. She just flies. She doesn't even like to sit up front. All the talking and the beeps and all that. She doesn't like it. So she sits in the back of the Bonanza, doesn't even wear a headset. That's the way she's happiest. I'm happy. She's happy. Life is good, you know. And she hops in the back and I do the old hot start. And it was a hot day. I can't remember how hot it was, but 300 horse Bonanzas, you just don't let them sit and idle on the ground. You got to get that air flowing and get them back up in the air. So that was kind of on my mind is, hey, let's do a quick turn and get this going. And so we flew out of New Richmond and just power up and go. And that's what we did. So
did you take a second run up on after you made your first stop, or was that first run up in the day sufficient for your procedures?
We typically don't do a second run up on stops like that. So I didn't do a mag check or anything like that. But, you know, with the engine analyzer, we're always looking for anything that pops up on. I'm constantly looking at that.
No anomalies?
None.
Throttle goes forward.
Feel that surge of power. I'm adding right rudder. Just everything's normal. With just two people in the Bonanza, it's off the ground really fast, and we're climbing out. And, you know, the first thing I do is I get that gear up, right? So if there's a problem, we've got the gear sucked up already. And the second thing I do is I reach over and I pull the prop back out of red line. And on a hot day, I'll pull it back to maybe 2,500 instead of a normal climb out at 2,600. And so I did that. I pulled it back to 2,500 just to take a little bit of off the engine, you know. And I was doing a fairly shallow climb out just to keep the airspeed up because the engine was already really warm. And
that makes sense.
Yeah. So taking it easy, climb it up, pull it back to 2,500. And I can't remember, but it was probably that 5 to 7 miles away from the airport. All at once, I look over. I didn't hear it or anything like that. I look over and I've got 2650 on my RPMs. Huh. So I pull it back. Okay. And I pulled it back to 2500. Everything's fine. I'm watching my temperatures, climbing out. I'm talking to center. I did a pop-up clearance and I just punched that in and I looked down and we're at 2400 RPMs. And so I add some more to the prop and bring it back up to 2500. Kind of go through a scan, everything's fine. About the second scan through, it's at 2,700. And
wow.
At this point, I'm looking at, okay, I'm thinking, okay, what's, you know, the one thing that Jim always said is when you see something, don't just start pulling levers, right? Just more often than not, just stop and think
and
about
fly
it.
Fly the plane.
Yeah, fly the plane. So Jim's on one shoulder and he's telling me, fly the airplane. And just think it through. And
he's
so
talking into your ear.
He's talking into my ear.
Right directly into the head, correct?
You bet. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking prop, right? You know, prop governor. You know, all this and that. And then it all levels out, right? No, the oil, you know, I'm thinking, hey, if I'm leaking oil, you know, and it's leaving the prop, that the, you know, I'm going to be seeing oil pressure drop. Oil temps go up, you know, I'm watching all that. Perfect. Everything's perfect.
Or seeing it on the windscreen.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. You didn't, then none of that happened.
And the airplane was just purring like a kitten. At that point, everything just went right back to how it was. So it was just those couple little variations that were very unusual. I'm almost certain I would not have recognized them if I would have had steam gauges. Because they were so subtle, you couldn't hear it. You know, it was just on that digital monitor. You know, at that point, it's like everything's fine. You know, and I was kind of so I'm kind of going through my mind saying, okay, was that a big deal? Is this a big deal? Everything's fine now.
What was your altitude at this point? How high had you climbed?
I was getting close to 7,000, which was what I was going to fly at that point, and I was on center and. Yeah, so I was pretty much dialed in for that flight, and everything's looking good.
Except what? What changed your mind?
It was just that little thought just wiggling in the back of my brain that's just like, there was just, for lack of better words, I just call it my spidey sense. And every now and again, it just sits there, and it just kind of wiggles in the back of my brain and just says something. Something's just not right.
Did you declare an emergency? What did you tell center at that point?
Well, there was no emergency. The plane's flying great. The plane's flying great, and it was just that it was an anomaly where I've never seen it before, right? I've never seen that variation. And so what's going through my head at that point was... Oh, it's just that wiggle in the back of my brain. And then there was something else. You know, I had an employee in the back. When I'm responsible for other people, even beside myself, I think that also makes a person more cautious. And so it was that. But then also, Rob, I lost a couple of friends in airplane accidents. And... you know, it's interesting. There really weren't accidents. They were pilot error. And
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It and they were unnecessary. And forever and ever, those pilots will have the stigma of they screwed up. They screwed up and people died. They will forever carry that. And I just, you know, the last thought before I just keyed the mic is, what could they say about Tim? You know, I don't want to sound too dramatic, but I've always kept that in the back of my mind is I don't want to be that pilot that says, you know what? He screwed up. I think we all make mistakes. I, you know, inadvertently, but man, I don't want to have that as my last thing. And so I just told Center, I said, I'm going back to the airport. And, so they asked me if I wanted to declare, you know, what was up. And I said, oh, I'm seeing some anomalies. I just want to get checked out on my engine. They said, well, are you declaring an emergency? And I said, no. I said, you know, stay with me, obviously, but no, I'm not going to declare emergency. I'm going to go back.
You stayed under their control. They gave you vectors back to the airport.
Yep. Yep. And it wasn't a busy airport, right? It's a non-towered airport. And it was outside of Bravo just a little bit. So it was really no big deal.
And the weather was severe clear?
Oh, beautiful day. Beautiful day.
All right.
Yeah. So
you landed without incident then, right? Did you notice anything on the way down in your descent? Did you notice any anomalies in the prop, in the RPM?
Uh-uh.
So the engine, all that time then, after it settled down, from the time you landed to the time you rolled up to the ramp and shut down, it was fine?
It was fine. It was absolutely fine. So I thought, well, you know, if there is a problem, I stayed high coming in on my approach, and I landed and taxied over and shut the airplane down.
So your employee was aware that you were doing it as a precaution?
Now, remember, she doesn't have a headset on.
So she doesn't know any of this?
She doesn't know anything.
You land, she thinks you've gotten to where you're going.
No, not quite. But she's like, oh, we turned around and landed, so there must be a reason, so...
And what reason did you discover when you got out of the airplane, Tim?
So I get out of the airplane and I walk around and I just pop, I just go around to the pilot side and I pop the cowling. And as I pop the cowling, my shoes are getting wet. There's something dripping down out of the wheel well on my shoes and on the pavement.
It was blue.
And it was blue, and I put it up to my nose, and it smelled like gasoline. And it was. So I was dripping 100 low lead, and the inside of the engine, the cowling, all of that hot part of the engine was just dripping with fuel.
Wow. You avoided a lot of stuff with that, because that could have turned into something very deadly. I want to take a break. Come back and let's finish this up and discover what you learned about flying from that. We'll be right back. Since 1961, Avemco has been the only aircraft insurance company that lets you speak directly with a decision maker empowered to approve coverage based on your unique situation. Visit avemco.com/flying or call 800-338-8705 for a quote and save an instant 5% for being an ILAFT listener. Save even more for recurrent training, a new rating, or participating in Fast Team Wings. Just ask an Avemco Aviation Insurance specialist how you can qualify and how much you'll save. Now, back to ILAFT. We are back with Tim Schaefer, who got a bunch of blue liquid on his shoes and was messing up his hands. And it turns out you had a gasoline leak in the airplane. What the heck happened, Tim?
Well, I didn't know. But when you have fuel all over the inside of your engine and you land and you have everything turned off, there is there's a moment where you kind of get that cold shudder or something, because that's a bad one, right? I'm not a mechanic, but I know that fuel all over the inside of those, that's a bad place to have the fuel.
It's a bad scenario that didn't turn bad, fortunately for you, even though you had a hot engine when you took off and you flew for a while before you turned around. What was the time interval from the time you took off to the time you get back to the airport, Tim?
It was, I don't know for certain, probably between 15 and 20 minutes.
Well, the question of the hour, Tim, is, what was the cause of this? Did you figure it out right away?
We ended up leaving the airplane. And, it was one of those things where I just said, I can't deal with this right now. So we hopped in my employee's pickup and drove it. And I came back 2 days later. And meanwhile, the mechanic had looked it over. And he found it fairly quick. But he did not find it until he started the airplane. And what happened is the fuel pump hose is supposed to have a hose clamp on it, the pressurized side of it. And there wasn't a hose clamp on there. And so the hose was kind of wiggling itself off and then spraying fuel around the engine. And when that happened, the engine RPMs dropped because, it wasn't getting enough fuel. And then the hose kind of slid on, and then it was getting too much fuel. And so that's where the RPMs were. It was going up and down because this hose on and off, not completely off and not completely on. So that's where the RPMs, that's why the RPMs were rising and falling.
The hose clamp was gone. It was not there at all.
It wasn't even on. No, it wasn't there.
When was the last time the engine worked on prior to however many times you or one of your partners had flown the airplane? When's the last time somebody was looking at that?
Oh, that was probably, we for sure had 50 plus hours on that airplane since the overhaul.
Did any of your partners ever say that they experienced the same symptoms?
No, I didn't.
50 hours and it didn't move, and then one hot day it did.
Yep. Yes.
Was this attributable to a mechanic?
Yeah.
In the annual?
I mean, ultimately, yes. There's supposed to be a hose clamp on there, and there wasn't, so...
Could you have seen it with any sort of external inspection, or would you have had to have removed the cowling to see it?
No, you would have had to been, had the cowling would have had to been off. So,
wow.
Yeah.
All right, let's do the takeaways. What did you learn about flying from that?
Engine analyzers, digital engine analyzers are, in my opinion, a must. They give a level of detail that I don't think analog gauges can do. And there's no way I would have noticed this if I would have had an analog gauge. I really don't think so. So that's one of my takeaways.
In a 2-hour flight, it could have spit out enough fuel that you might not have had enough fuel to make it to your destination. That's another thing that came to my mind.
The mechanic told me later, he's like, had you not turned around, the amount of fuel that was spraying out, you would not have made it. He really felt like an in-air explosion was probably what would have resulted at some point.
This is an audio podcast, but I can see your face, and that realization is still pounding you, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
A year later.
Yeah.
What else did you learn about flying from that? I don't think you have to know anything more.
Fly the airplane the same way. Have your partners fly it the same way. I think that's important. Trust the people that you're flying with so that these anomalies are noted. I mean, we share information back and forth. Hey, what are you seeing? Did you see anything different? So we're constantly sharing information back and forth and really tracking our numbers. So I think that's important. Probably another one is just trust your gut. Like, don't override that. That's telling you something. I call it my spidey sense, but mm-hmm. You can call it something else. Really trust the gut. If something's wiggling in the back of your brain, there's probably a good reason for it.
Did you go back to the original mechanic and ask him what happened?
Yes, but there's no perfect answer on that.
It's a he said, she said thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I am glad you've lived to tell about it, because trust in your gut, there are little things that are telltale that maybe somebody, you know, God or the universe or somebody or your instructor sitting on your shoulder talking into the side of your head was giving you the warning you needed. You dodged the bullet in a big way, didn't you?
I believe so.
It is a remarkable story, Tim Shaffer. Thank you so much for being on I Laughed.
I appreciate it, Rob.
Tim's intuition, his spidey sense, as he called it, likely saved his and his passenger's life. Thanks again, Tim. I'm continuing to receive emails with I Laughed stories. They're great. And if you've got one that you'd like to share, let me know. My email address is rob@flying.media. rob@flying.media. I Learned About Flying From That is available wherever you get your podcasts. We drop episodes every couple of weeks, so you can hear the firsthand accounts of the flying lessons that sometimes only experience can teach. I do hope you'll subscribe and share it with your friends. I've heard many comments that even non-pilots have enjoyed hearing these stories and lessons learned. Julie Boatman is editor-in-chief of Flying Magazine, and Lisa DeFries is the executive producer of I Laughed. For Avemco Aviation Insurance and Flying Magazine, fueling the passion for flight since 1927, I'm Rob Ryder. Catch you next time on I Learned About Flying From That.